And the title is A Powerful Model to Establish and Sustain Academic Writers' Productivity. So we have a couple of goals we want to achieve today. And basically, we want to start with knowing a little bit about who you are in general. We won't have much time to introduce everybody individually, but I want to get a sense of who is our audience today so we can adjust how we talk and examples that we give that might be useful for you. Another objective is we wanted to describe the power services to you, but put a little bit of more emphasis on what we call the power writing model. And hopefully, one of our goals is to encourage you to gain power over your own writing by learning about what we do at our university. So does that sound like a doable plan? Okay, and if you have questions, just, again, raise your hand. We'll please remind me that you need the microphone when you ask a question, and because we're recording all this. But please feel free to ask questions as we go along. So let's start with, who are you? Because I can't ask everybody to introduce themselves individually, I want to, with a show of hands, tell me how many of you are in colleges or universities right now. Is that the majority? Majority. Those of you who didn't raise your hands, where are you? That's not college or university. K-12, yes, and? Self-employed academic editor. Oh, I need to know you. Yes. Anybody else? Yes. Who's the self-employed academic editor? Yes. And you at the back? Self-employed editor also? No. Academic writing. Okay. For those of you, and thank you for saying that and sharing, for those of you in academia, how many of you are students or graduate students or working on degrees? Yay! And how many of you are junior faculty, just starting? Okay, nice mix. Yeah. And how many of you are more senior faculty, already established and there for a while? Okay, that gives me a good sense. So I hope by learning what we're doing with Power, you might take something that you can use at whatever level on your developmental career and professional career you're in. Okay? So let's us introduce ourselves first, and I'll introduce myself last, but this is my team, and they always say, you know, you're as strong as your weakest link. It's like, I'll never be weak because all my links are so strong. I have such a strong support network that is absolutely amazing. I'm the most privileged and blessed person on the face of the earth in terms of academic work and personal friendships, too. So I'm going to ask my team to introduce themselves, and I'll introduce myself last, and then we'll move on into the power model. So, Jen.
My name is Jennifer Travis, and I met this team at Texas A&M University working on my PhD, which I finished about a year ago, and I've been a full-time faculty member at a community college for 10 years. So I did the part-time PhD thing, and I did actually finish it. It can be done.
Howdy. My name is Chien, and I'm a PhD student. And I came to Power Group in 2013, spring of 2013.
Don't ask me for dates.
Hello, everyone. My name is Malika. I'm a doctoral student at Texas A&M with my Aggie friends here. And it's now 2 years that I'm part of Power, and it's transformative.
Hello, my name is Tracy Hodges, and I've been part of Power now for 3 years. And I am about to graduate in August with my PhD, and I had just accepted a junior faculty position at a university. So I will be leaving this group and hopefully having new groups to be part of.
Tracy is one of my right arms, you know. We have two students that are working with Power right now, helping manage, and Tracy is one of them. So we'll miss her terribly when she goes on. Yeah, and Maggie used to be. So Tracy and Catherine, which you'll meet in a minute, are the new Maggie. So Maggie.
It took two of us.
Yeah, exactly.
I agree. No, just more power. We just grew.
Just so kidding.
I'm Maggie. Yeah. I'm Maggie Huerta. And actually, Tracy, once you're part of Power, it never really goes away. So just FYI, I started an assistant professor position here at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas last July. I can't believe it's almost been a year. And with my colleague, Dr. Chilla Scott over there, we started a Power UNLV writing group. I have some people that have attended. So it's really exciting. I really believe in this, and I really hope that you get something out of it. So I know you will. So it's good stuff. Here you go.
Hi, I'm Catherine Wright. I am the other half of the new Maggie. I've been part of Power.
The other right arm.
Yeah, the other right arm. Since, what did we say, 2013? A few of us all started together. And it's been, I really started grad school thinking I was just going to get by. Like, I would just be able to do enough to graduate and, like, check the boxes. And that's not been the experience at all. And I think it's because of this model. So I hope you get something out of it.
Hi, my name is Dominique Klupp, and I'm an associate professor of adult education at Texas A&M. I've been there 11 years. I have been a part of Power for 8, and I am actually the co-director with Pat. I'm currently on leave from the university. I have taken everything that I've learned from Power and gone on and gotten more training as a creativity and writing coach, and so I started my own company in January called Inspiring the Creative Within. So, yes, that's
and
what I'm working
you're
on
You're doing
now.
A presentation tomorrow, so if you want to know anything about
creativity,
coaching,
she's
mm-hmm.
the guru,
yeah,
the person
so.
To go to.
Yeah. Hello, I'm Miranda Walachowski, and I am a clinical associate professor in educational psychology bilingual programs, and I have been with Power since its inception.
Yes, it's true. I'm so proud of that. So as you see, we have a mix of graduate students and junior faculty. You know, Jennifer is Dr. Travis, and Maggie's Dr. Huerta, Dr. Klupp, and Dr. Walachowski here. So a lot of people, except for Dominique, that started as graduate students at Texas A&M and became part of Power, and you'll understand what is Power in a minute, became part of Power, graduated, stayed there for a while, and are now still part of Power as faculty members. So that's my wonderful support team and collaborators, all of them. So that's why they're part of this presentation. I am Pat Goodson. I am a full professor in the area of health education and health promotion. People say, well, what are you doing with writing in that? And I go, well, I have not found a better strategy for managing stress at all levels than writing. I think writing is one of the most effective stress management tools, and if that's not health education, I don't know what is. You know, if that's not promoting the health of people, helping them write with less stress, I don't know what is. So my area of research is not writing necessarily. My area of research is sexual health, and I do qualitative and quantitative studies on sexual reproductive health, sexuality education, and HIV and AIDS. So if you want to talk about that later, we can have a conversation. So that's who we are. I started Power, and we'll talk about how we started that, created this service that we're going to talk about here in a minute. So what are Power services? In a nutshell, you're going to see it's a very complex entity, but in a nutshell, Power services consist of, they're basically, it's a peer-led network. The idea that a little bit of support from people just like you that are in the same boat that you are, a little bit of support from them goes a mighty long way, correct? So that was the whole impetus for starting Power, is this idea of graduate students helping graduate students. In the beginning, I didn't envision junior faculty or faculty at all getting involved very much. The idea was, can we get graduate students to support other graduate students in their academic writing journeys? Can we create something for that? So now it's evolved to support both graduate students writing, but also junior faculty writing. We have junior faculty not only participating in Power in terms of offering services, but we have some faculty that come to Power to get some of that support that we try to offer. Okay. Also, what you need to know is that this is a service that is provided by our College of Education to the entire university. So if any of you are in colleges of ed and you're trying to get your college on the map at the university, think about creating something similar to this, because it really puts you on the map in the sense of, wow, you're able to offer this wonderful support service to all of the students. So we're going to see what we do specifically, and we're dealing with students across, graduate students only, and some junior faculty, but mostly graduate students across the entire university. And current funding for power services right now, we have funding from the College of Education and Human Development, which is the CEHD you see there. We have funding from them. We have funding from the university, from the provost office, channeled through the college to support power. But here's the secret. Power began with a budget of zero. So power started when I had a chance to be an associate dean part-time at the college level, and the dean said to me, we need to create something that will help graduate students be better at their research. And that's your task, Pat Goodson, to figure out something that we can do for them. And in my research and at getting data from the students, we realized the issue and the problem was writing, the writing expectations. We had writing expectations up here for students that they would come and publish and present and, you know, write their dissertations in 3 or 4 months and get out of there and fine. And it's like, ooh, wait a minute. But they come with this level of skill. And who's moving them up or putting a safety net if they fall? There was nothing there. So then this idea of providing support for their writing and some kind of way of providing tools, not just support, but also providing tools, came up. And I started the idea of power services. But my dean said, okay, Pat, that's a great idea. Love it. But give me a proposal with a budget of zero. And then I'll let you do it. And I'm going, okay, so we did it with a budget of zero. So now we're fortunate to have some monies because the university decided they wanted to invest a little bit on us. But in the beginning, it started with zero. And everybody that's a power consultant that works providing services in power, everybody's a volunteer, except for the two directors here. We have a small stipend to help cover classes so we can be free from a little bit of our teaching, not much, a little bit, to work with power. But other than that, everybody is a volunteer giving of their time for this. So if we have to go back to a zero budget, we can do it. It is doable. It's just the issue of time. We don't have more than 24 hours in a day yet. So it would be hard to do. But money-wise, it can be done with a zero budget. So that gives you very, very brief strokes what power is, but we're going to talk more details about the actual pieces of the puzzle here. So power actually is an acronym. It was inspired by Peter Elbow's work, his book, Writing with Power. Anybody read it? No? If you haven't, read it. Yes, read it. It's a must read. It was basically inspired on that, but I wanted to use the word power as an acronym. So it became the acronym for Promoting Outstanding Writing for Excellence in Research, which is kind of difficult to remember. And my father begs to differ. He says, no, it doesn't stand for that. He will say it stands for Poor Old Writers Expecting Rejection. And loves to send me these cartoons of Snoopy with a rejection. So here's Snoopy reading, Dear Contributor, thank you for submitting your story to our magazine. To have time, we're enclosing 2 rejection slips, one for this story and one for the next story you send us. And I feel that this kind of mirrors academic writing in a way. It's like, oh, go ahead, reviewers, send me the rejection for the re-review number 1 and 2 already, because we know we're not going to please any of you. Thank you very much. And so that's what power does not stand for, by the way, even though my father would like to say it does. It's not poor writer waiting for rejection. It's promoting outstanding writing for excellence in research. The way I like to think about power and what we have now is basically 2 interacting systems inside a certain context. And because we're in Las Vegas, I think one of the easier images to have is, you know those rolling balls when you do the lottery? You have that rolling cage that's round, and you have the little balls with the numbers inside of them, and you roll them. So imagine one of those cages was just 2 little balls inside. So the 2 little balls would be the 2 interacting dynamic systems that we're going to talk about. And the rolling cage would be the context. So it's very dynamic. It's very fluid. It's very much moving all the time. Who was it that said this morning in the plenary session that you can't stay put, otherwise you implode? Right? So that's power. Power does not stay put. Power is always moving, always going around and changing. So the first system or the first ball that's moving inside that context are the services provided by power. We're going to talk about them in a minute in more detail. And the second bar, the second one in that is the writing model and the philosophy that undergirds Power services as a whole. The context then is the environment in which Power exists and lives and survives and rolls around a lot. Basically, the facilitators and the barriers in the environment are the elements we're going to talk about here today. Okay? But before we start, we need to ask why. Why have a writing support service at all? Why support academic writing? So now I'm going to ask some of my panelists that are going to talk about these things. They're going to talk about it a little bit. And just so you'll know, folks, because this is a long session, we're going to have breaks as we go along. So don't worry that you're going to be sitting and get sleepy too quickly, because hopefully you won't. So who wants to talk about the writing? Why support academic writing? Jen? Maggie?
Whoever wants to go first.
Okay. Oh, thank you.
And then I'll give her my
Yeah, question. Okay. Well, as a recent, I guess, I still feel like I'm a recent PhD graduate. I think there's two, for me, there's really two reasons. One is, from a student perspective, we need support. I mean, I really needed the support. I come from a background in literature. I love writing. I loved writing creatively, but I hated academic writing because I didn't know. I didn't understand. And until I found Power, I didn't understand the structure and the process and how that all worked. And so it was really important for me. So now, kind of on the other side, now that I've graduated and I'm assistant professor, right, in faculty, sounds so weird to say, it's so important for my students, right? And it's still really important for myself because everything I've learned at A&M, I'm applying for my career. So this service to me is key for surviving in academia, whether you're a graduate student or you're a faculty, whatever phase you're in. And what's the beauty of it, in my opinion, is that you can teach it to other people and it can replicate. So I think it's that's why I think it's so critical. So
I will tell you that I was probably about as far on the scale of hopeless case on writing as possible. Not so much the quality of the writing. I guess I came in with, I don't know how, because I didn't write a darn thing in my undergrad or my master's, which were in engineering and math. I came in with enough writing skills to make it through the course papers and stuff. I didn't really have like devastating feedback or anything that, but I was nowhere near the bar that was expected to finish. And I wasn't tied into any kind of a community. Of course, I was a part-time student. I had a job somewhere else. I didn't see myself as a writer. I saw myself as a math teacher because that was what I was paid to do. And that mindset made me like a seventh-year doctoral student who didn't have a dissertation yet, and that was not good. And so as soon as I hooked onto this, I embraced it. I was like, oh, I was like a sponge, like, let me grab all the writing, because I had zero writing training until I went to her studios. And then I started, like, I bought all the books on writing on the book, and I inhaled them because I was like, I didn't know that. Oh, I need to get rid of extra words. Oh, I had no idea. My writing is full of extra words. And so I just, because I'd had zero training, it doesn't come to you in your classes, at least for, I think, most programs. And even so, you're not always ready to hear the information yet. You have to keep revisiting and revisiting it. And I really needed a source of feedback and community in order to progress. And so when I hit this thing, then I was hitting the ground running. But I floundered for a very long time before that happened. So a life-changing transformation for me. Yes. So,
Miranda.
For me, and for students, I believe the value also lies in the skills that you acquire through Power really translate well into just basic life skills and professional skills. So understanding how to be systematic in an approach to something, understanding how to get good feedback from individuals, writing for clarity, having clarity in your mind for the things that you're going to do, the concept of being consistent and doing a little bit every day, you know, is a lot better than binging. So all those things really translated well into, you know, my personal life as a parent and a wife, and also my professional life when I was a graduate assistant teaching as well, and now faculty. So through Power, I think life skills, soft skills are also developed for students that they wouldn't get otherwise.
Anybody else want to add anything? Malika?
I just wanted to add that sometimes as a PhD student or graduate student, your writing can be very isolating. You sit there, you have your own idea, then your little world, you try to put it into words. And if you stay alone and work on your writing, you may never get what's the potential of your ideas. So just getting it to your community, having a group to get feedback from, is really, I think, very helpful. So that was my take on that.
So if you notice, the reasons for supporting academic writing are multiple. And the most important ones are basically the people that are coming to your graduate programs and you graduate students have not learned some really basic things related to writing that could really propel your productivity. We just don't know where to go to learn those unless you're lucky enough to be a part of an organization like this one, for instance. Then you would learn. But I got another Power consultant. Pull up a chair, Tibby. Then you would learn. But Tillis, and why are you not here? Yeah. Okay. Well, so we got a couple of Power people here that are not here. Yeah, Chills, come on up front. So the issue is a long one. Authorship, when submitted, the stuff, all that sort of stuff. And anyway, so not having learned some of the basic stuff. For those of you who are in academic settings and you have more of a leadership role, I really would challenge you to think about what is it that you could be doing to create a culture of support for academic writing. And sometimes all you have to do is model stress-free or low-stress writing to your students and to your colleagues. Sometimes that's how you start. Other times you start with a small Power set of strategies or set of activities like Maggie and Tracy are doing at UNLV, for instance. But there are multiple ways of starting something with the question, how can I start supporting the academic writing of the graduate students mainly? Hopefully you can get to faculty also, but how can I start doing that from the position I'm in my own academic network? It's worth asking the question. You don't have to have a huge budget or a huge plan, a business plan. You can really start small and grow. But it's incredibly important, folks, because we are in a culture where if you don't write, again, your research does not exist. You can do I tell my students, you can do the sexiest research ever. If you do not publish, it doesn't exist beyond the walls of your laboratory. Very nice work, but it, for all practical purposes, non-existent. You have to write and publish. And so, and the competition is getting much harder right now. So NIH funding, for instance, in my field has dropped to something like 12% of grants submitted get funded only. And if those are not well written, folks, I mean, the quality of the writing is one of the first things that will eliminate grants from the competition right off the bat, right? So if you don't have a writing habit and you don't have good habits, if you don't have support, don't know where to go, where to learn, and all that sort of stuff, you're going to be floundering, and your students will too. So I hope I've made the case for why supporting academic writing, it's very, very important that we do so. And we can do it as students, even. We can model it for our colleagues, our peers. We can support our peers. And for faculty, you can start thinking from an administrative perspective in terms of changing the culture in your environment to be a supportive culture that supports academic writing. Okay, and it also helps to nurture those people that, believe it or not, there's some academics that love to write and write beautifully. And it just, academic writing kind of killed their desire for writing. They didn't want to write anymore. You know, it's your job to kind of kindle that fire again and get them excited about writing anything later on. We need people writing about science in different genres, for instance. Okay, so just keep that in the back of your mind. So that first system, that first ball that was rolling inside of that cage, are the set of services that we provide with a power. There's a list of services there, and I asked Catherine and Tracy to talk about it. So which one wants to go first? Okay. So this is what we offer to students.
All right, I'm going to talk about the first couple of bullet points there. The Power Hour is probably what we're best known for, or one of the things we're best known for on campus. Dr. Goodson keeps referring to us as power consultants. So if you are a power consultant, what that means is that you volunteer 1 hour of your week, each week during the semester, to offer writing consultations for graduate students. So currently we're using Google Calendar has an appointments feature, which is not perfect, but going back to that idea of a zero budget, it is free. And I'm not tech savvy, and I was able to teach myself how to set it up, and I don't think I annoyed everyone too much with the emails back and forth trying to get that going. But what that means is our students can go online and to sign up for an appointment, and literally all they do is click the appointment. It sends the power consultant an email, and they show up. We tell them it's not an editing service. We're there to help the writer themselves, not so much the writing, improve. So people are told to bring 3 to 5 pages of their writing. We read the writing aloud with them, and we try to identify a couple of issues that they can improve. So the idea is we're not going to sit there with a red pen and go through the entire essay and mark every mistake, because that's overwhelming and people can't move forward with that. But we target specific issues and try to help them improve their writing. And a lot of times I've found that the PowerPoints I have, people really just want to talk. They want to talk about their process and why it's not going well and get tips for how they can improve. And that's totally acceptable. And it's free to the students. They can sign up for as many as they want to. Sometimes people will get a good relationship with one consultant and sign up for them every week, week after week. We offer appointments on campus, off campus, whatever works. So
we also offer by Skype if people need to meet us by Skype. One thing we don't do, folks, is ask folks to send us their writing beforehand.
No.
That won't work, by the way, with your volunteers. They're not going to do that. But we ask people to bring in only 2 or 3 pages of their writing, not send it ahead of time, and to be face-to-face somehow, even if it's by Skype, not just voice, and not just send my stuff in and get it back. We need that interaction. Something that Catherine said is really important is that power is about the writer. We're more about the writing, the writer than we are about the writing, because the writing you can give to an editor. An editor can clean up the writing, but what about next time? So we're going to work with the student a lot on giving feedback on the writing, yes, but as a jump, as a bridge to get to them as a writer also.
Thank you. And then the second bullet point is talking about the Power Writing Studios. We have both basic and advanced writing studios. These are largely offered by Dr. Goodson and Dr. Klepp. And basically, the basic studio is going over the tenets of the Power Principle, some of which we're going to talk about today. They are weekly 2-hour sessions over 4 weeks. They're free to the students. They're not credit-bearing or anything like that. But just talking about various ways to improve your writing habit. There's a huge demand for the basic studios. And I remember when we took over, Maggie was telling us that this was going to be crazy. And we didn't quite believe her. But literally, we will open up the sign up online, and we just have a university webpage. And within about a half hour, they're full. If we don't get there and close it within 3 to 4 hours, we'll have hundreds of students signed up. And we only offer it to about 15 to 20 people, depending on the size of the room, is really what's limiting us. And then once you've taken the basic Power Studio, you can sign up for an advanced Power Studio, which tends to be a little bit more informal, depending on what people are looking for. Dr. Klepp's advanced studios had a lot to do of giving each other feedback and then kind of just writing together and spending that time once a week getting some writing done. It was really, it's really useful for keeping things going.
Our third one talks about the writing productivity course that we offer. And so this is basically kind of like the Power Studios on steroids. So instead of it being non-credit bearing, first of all, students get credit for the course. So graduate students can enroll and they get 3 hours of credit, and has a really nice title like Writing for Publication in Academia or something that looks great on your CV. And so for then about 15 weeks, students get to come and have this course where they learn all the principles of power. They also get a support group built in. So that idea of the accountability that Maggie and Jennifer had spoken about, and all of the reasons that all of us talked about why power was so important and the writing process is important, you get that in a class every week. All of the books that Jennifer talked about are the books that are readings for the semester. So you get to read about writing and just really kind of initiate yourself into this in an entire semester. It's how I got started in power, and now I use the term that I was pre-Goodson and post-Goodson. It makes a huge difference. So it's really great for students and giving them that long-term commitment if that's what they need. For the power consultants, we also have a writing group that meets every 2 weeks. We meet on Friday nights at Dr. Goodson's house, and this is very much like the power hours, but for power consultants. So consultants now get a chance to bring 2 to 3 pages of something we're working on and get feedback from the group. And so it's a great opportunity for us to work together and practice those skills that we're trying to give to our fellow colleagues and classmates, but also get feedback on our own writing at the same time, which can be really empowering. And it's that idea of the support group again. Sometimes you just come because you need to give feedback and hear that it's okay. And sometimes you just want to come and hear everybody else tell you, okay, writing's going great, or I'm struggling, and you can kind of have other people who share in your struggles and your triumphs, which
and,
is
and
really
this
great.
Is a word for faculty here. I'm a faculty member, and my power writing group, most students are still, most consultants there in that group are still graduate students. Some are graduating and leaving like Tracy. But it's amazing because they've been trained to give support and to give feedback to the writer. Amazing the quality of the feedback that I get on my stuff. That group, for me, has become my support network and my people to go to for excellent, outstanding feedback. And what I'm always amazed is how many times we have meetings of the group where 7 will come to the group, but only 3 bring work. And then I always ask, so what are you all doing here? And oh, we're just here to help. We're just here to give, to practice giving feedback, which is something I want you to keep at the back of your mind, the word practice, because this is going to be an element we're going to talk about quite a bit in a few minutes. But that idea of form, if you're faculty and you have a few graduate students, that train them to know all these things about writing, and then they end up supporting you, at not only you supporting them. And that's the beauty of this interactive system thing. So,
and then the last thing we offer are workshops. So there are workshops available for the power consultants. We try to do one about every semester or at least one a year, just depending on how things are going. And this is great for 2 reasons. So first of all, it gives the consultants, again, some time to learn something new about their writing, but it's also great networking. So we've had Donnell Stevens come and talk to us about journal writing. We had Judith Garrard do a Skype meeting for us talking about the Matrix Method. We had Megan McIntosh come and talk to us about, you know, being whelmed. And even our very own Dominique Klupp has talked to us about some of her creativity strategies. And so all of that helps the power consultants, but also connects us with writers who are also doing great things. So you can kind of see, you know, for me, it's like, I want to be like you. I want to be whelmed. And so that really helps. But we also offer them workshops for faculty, which are led by Dr. Goodson and Dr. Klupp. And those are to teach the power principles to faculty members across campus, because we don't want this to just be for the graduate students. One of the best things is that if we help the faculty, we can then help the graduate students. And we do want our influence to kind of go beyond just our college or just our grad students that know Dr. Goodson. And so this allows the faculty to learn and get to practice. And I think from what they've told me and what I've seen, the faculty are just as appreciative of it as the graduate students and get to learn new things about writing and logging their time and just getting re-energized about writing.
And one of the things that, one of the elements that is not on this list is that we became a TAA chapter. So all power consultants, so because they're all volunteers, right? The way we reward them for their time that they give and the service that they provide, which is usually very outstanding, is basically we give them a 1 year, or as long as they're in power, they have a membership to TAA that we pay for. So they're TAA members. We formed the TAA, the TAMU chapter over there, and we promote TAA over in our group as a resource, a valuable resource for graduate students and faculty alike. So I forgot to put that on the list. Okay. Sure.
I'd like to ask if it's possible for the young lady who just spoke about the workshops to put the workshops and the leaders that you invited from TAA up on the... Okay, great.
Put the names over there. Okay. Any other questions? Yeah. So, yes, exactly. And I'll talk about one in a minute. Okay, so now we're going to talk about the power model or philosophy. And basically, this little system, which is the second little ball inside the cage rolling, right, consists of several principles, strategies, and tools that we'll address in a minute. And they don't come out of the blue. These principles, strategies, and tools are based on theory. And because everything I have to do in my world has to be based on theory, this is also based on theory. And these are some of the theories that support the power writing model. So support theory, identity theory, adult learning theory, talent development theory, and creativity. And I'm going to let Dominique talk a little bit about the theories, and then we're going to take a break either after she talks or before.
Actually, we're not going to talk about theories. Okay. We're going to demonstrate the theories.
Great.
So, all right, for those of you who are willing and able to get up, now's the time. You've been sitting for way too long. I'm a professor of adult ed. Everyone who wants to participate, I'm not going to ask you to do anything too onerous. You're just going to have to walk. So I want you to kind of stand up and just walk. And just notice what happens when you walk. Notice what happens to your arms, your legs. What do they swing? How do they do? All right, so someone, are you willing to share? What are you noticing about, like, when you're walking? Is that a hard task, easy task?
I'm not even thinking.
Not even thinking, right? Autopilot, just kind of doing it, right? So we're going to switch it up in a second. I'm going to ask you to actually use your arms and your legs and see what happens. There we go, that's right. Now, are your arms and your legs moving at the same time? Are they moving independently?
Power walking.
Power walking. Awesome. So in the theory around adult learning, the theory around development, is that if you want to change your habits, if you want to change your thinking, you have to actually change your activities. So what we ask, and part of the theory that we build on, is that you're going to change your activity. So for those of you who are still standing with me, now you're going to walk, but I'm going to ask you to walk in a very deliberate way. The idea here is to actually get you into what is called the right brain. We're going to move you into the right hemisphere, but also right, W-R-I-T-E. So now you're going to walk, but you're going to walk much more robotically. So I want you to walk with right arm, right leg. Left arm, left leg. It's hard. You're going to notice that your hands and your feet are still walking independently. All right. Keep doing that. Yes, very soldieristic, very militaristic. But if you notice, actually, what you notice is you start to, you go back to the old habit. Even though you're trying really hard, you'll go back to the old habit. So once you think you've kind of mastered that a little bit, now I want you to do it backwards with your eyes closed. So, right, we had somebody just walk into somebody else. So... All right, now this I wish they were filming. Now this would be fun to watch. So, but yeah, so the idea here is that as we change our habits, a lot of the habits that are formulated, we move back into the rut. So I'm going to ask people to go ahead and take their seats. I'm going to talk a little bit explicitly about the theory here. So thank you so much for getting up and participating and moving around.
So the notion here is, how many of you have heard the sort of myth that it takes 21 days to build a habit? Yes, okay, right. So I use it for exercise all the time. I'm like, I just have to go to the gym 21 days and I'll be fine. So it is a myth. It actually, neuroscientists have started studying this very deliberately. And what they have found is actually it's much more of a range. Some people develop a habit as early as 18 days, and some take as long as 280-something. Those are the outliers. They didn't include them in the study. But the average is actually 66 days. 66 days. What was that say that?
She's an outlier. I said, that's why I didn't lose the weight.
That is, yes, me too. So what ends up happening is, if it takes 66 days to get back into, say, the theory is to get into the habit of writing, many of us never get there, but it takes less than a week to lose the habit. Yeah. So what we do in our world is, if we want to go to the next slide, we're going to talk a little bit about deep and deliberate practice, is we really emphasize writing as practice. Now, if we come in here, and if this was all sort of like a big joke TAA was putting on, and Maureen and Libby were like, oh, guys, really, you're not here to learn about the power writing model. We're going to have you all perform a piano concerto at the end of the weekend. What would you all go do other than run screaming out of here? That's not an option.
Yeah, practice.
That's the answer. You'd practice. How many of you have written an academic paper or journal or something, and you started working on it, say, a month before? How many a week before? Anyone as a graduate student or undergrad ever wait until the night before? Yes. How many the day of? Yes, I love these. Yes, honest people. The day of. Now, why is writing the only art that we do not practice? I would never say to my musician friends, oh, so I hear you performing in that symphony. You're going to start working on it the week before. Or my friend who's a sculptor who commissions things up to a year or 2 years in advance. But yet writing, we think it's okay to practice and start a week before, sometimes the night before. So what we do is build on the writing development theory, that it takes time, and it's deep, deliberate practice. So this is based on Daniel Coyle's work, The Talent Code, where he was interested in studying high-performing athletes, musicians. He looked at a performing arts camp in New York where there were students, high school students having gains up to 2 years in one summer. What he did when he was there was he noticed that a very specific type of practice was happening. If you walked past the music rooms, they were not just simply playing the violin. They were playing it so slowly and so deliberately that you couldn't make out anything other than just the one single note. The reason for that, anyone have any guesses? Why would you play so slowly?
I would think that you would, if you slow something down, you can really figure out if you're really missing something somewhere. So it's like, you know, laying a concrete foundation. You want to make sure there are no bubbles or cracks.
Yep. So the theory behind the writing is the same thing. You capture your mistakes. So you want to go as slowly as possible. And the other thing, too, here is what he found was that, so we're all born with billions of neural pathways in our brains. They atrophy over time. That's why the 66 days to build the habit, but then only a week or so to lose the habit. His notion is that these neural pathways need time to build, and it's the building up of actually myelin sheath. So writing as habit is actually just a well-formed rut in your brain, believe it or not. And the 66 days, well, the 21 days actually is just the neural pathways starting to come back together. And then most people kind of, you know, fall off the wagon. The 66 days is for to actually form the rut and to solidify. So for those of you who are interested in having the habit become just that, you have to sometimes forgive yourself and recognize its physiology. So when our inner critic starts talking to us and saying, oh my gosh, I can't do this, I'm not good at this, I don't know how to do it, anyone have imposter syndrome? Mm-hmm. There's physiology behind it. So we help teach students the physiology behind it, and we also, of course, deal with the psychology, all of the emotional stuff. And that's where all the support systems, because there's so much research that's been done on writer's block, writer's resistance at the individual level, but writing is a solitary act for many of us. So we try to take the theories and actually use them as a way to develop. As you can see, how many of us? One, two, let's count me, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. There's 11 of us, yeah. So, I mean, we are a support system. Oh, yep, 12. We're a support system for one another. And so all of that is helping to take actual theory based in psychology, adult learning, social identity formation, and making it into something very, very real. And there's two books on the next slide that are helpful. So a lot of what I just talked about comes from the talent code, which I mentioned, and then the practicing mind, developing focus and discipline in your life. So that's sort of the theory. It all comes from something.
And I'm going to pass this around. If you're interested in a copy of the PowerPoints and of the resource list, give us your email, and I will send you a Dropbox folder that you can access. I refuse to make handouts this time. I'm tired of carrying paper that other people don't want. So if you do want it, sign up, and I'll send it. Don't sign if you really don't want it, okay? Save me the work there. But if you really want it, I'd be happy to share it with you. What I want to mention very briefly is the Talent Code is the book that Daniel Coyle wrote about developing myelin in neurons and creating super-duper efficient neural pathways. But just recently, like 2 weeks ago, I started reading this little book, The Practicing Mind. Has anybody read it? It's a fascinating little book. I highly recommend it. I actually need to send out an email to my power folks and say, read this. Nothing new here, but he talks about the concept of deliberate practice. Deliberate practice is the notion that you practice something by slowing yourself down to pay attention to your mistakes, getting feedback, and correcting. And this guy who wrote this book, he's a piano tuner and a piano restorer. And he talks about how slowing down your practice helps slow down time and helps you enjoy the process. This book's main thesis is how do we find ways to enjoy the process and forget about the outcome in a way. It's like don't get tied to the outcome, but really enjoy the process. So he gives a really cool example of one day where he was basically overbooked in his schedule, and he had to tune several pianos for concertos and stuff like that day. And what he decided to do was to actually slow himself down. Otherwise, he would be spinning like crazy throughout the whole day. And he deliberately, like, took each tool out of his tool bag, one at a time, lined them up nicely next to him, something he would never do. He'd just grab the tool out of the toolbox, use it, put it back, that kind of thing. He lined the tools up. And he did it excruciatingly slow from the first job that he had that day. And he was amazed to see that he had time to go have a sit-down lunch that day, whereas first he looked at his schedule, he was almost double-booked. There was no way he could do it. He said, by slowing down and paying a lot of attention to the process, the time slowed down, and he wasn't running around like crazy. He had more time to spare than he ever imagined. So there's some real nice little gems in that book. It's called The Practicing Mind. It's all about deliberate practice. I have not seen people, that's what's unique about power, is that we have adopted the idea of deliberate practice into academic writing. The only piece in the literature I have seen is one article that's out there that talks theoretically about the need to incorporate deliberate or deep practice, the terms are the same, into academic writing. It's not being done very much. We're trying to do it with the power model. The power model is about you need to practice your writing. You need to schedule your writing sessions. You need to practice. So that's what I wanted to mention about that book. Dominique, anything else? So the power model, remember, it's one of those two little balls inside the cage rolling around, right? Now think about that little ball as a system in itself, made up of little balls inside of it. And that's what real everything in life is, and in nature. And I'm going to start passing this around. are systems within systems. It's something that I am a fan of, is writing and studying complexity science. So I like to look at things as systems. So the power model is a system with three elements, and the elements are the strategies, the tools, and the support. So strategies. We're going to read this thing clockwise. We're going to start with practice. That's where we start, the idea of practicing. We need to look at our writing sessions, not as sessions that need to accomplish writing a whole paper today or writing a whole grant today, but I'm going to put in some writing today because I am going to practice. We need words to throw out. That's part of the writing model that we have. You know, did you have a bad writing session today? Yeah, I sat down and I wrote for 30 minutes, but boy, nothing really came out. It was really awful. Well, go and do a happy dance. Celebrate. Because you wrote words to throw out. You need to throw about 90% almost of your words out to retain the better ones if you want to be a good writer. If you want to be an iffy writer, write at the last minute, keep all the words you generated, you know, and that's fine. But if you want to be a stellar writer, you need to write a lot of stuff to throw away. Dominique's a creativity coach, and she'll tell you that in creativity, they always say your first ideas are never your best ones. Never. So for my, huh? Never your best ideas. The first ideas, never the best ideas. So if you write that paper 5 minutes before the deadline, your first ideas have to be your only ideas, and then my students come back and say, oh, but I get by with it. The professor says it's okay. It's okay. Well, and I say my response to that is, can you imagine what it could be if it wasn't those words that you used, that if you actually threw those out and got the best ones? Can you imagine what it would have been? Yeah. And so you need to write stuff to throw out. You need to practice. You need to slow down in practice. Okay, I'm not going to get into the details of this because we don't have the time. Like, we have a whole three-hour graduate course on this stuff. But there are resources in the resources list that you will see that have this described in detail. So you don't have to worry about that. You can have access to the details. So part of the practice is practicing daily in small chunks, 30 to 45 minutes with lots of breaks. The Pomodoro technique that Maggie and Jennifer talked about earlier, just time yourself and don't spend over 45 minutes or more. We don't recommend that for many reasons. Many of them are physiological reasons. So Kathleen this morning talked about staying on the computer for long periods of time and actually damaging your neck and damaging your eyes and damaging your wrists. That's exactly what's going to happen. So breaks are very, very important, and doing it in small chunks. Use a timer, use the Pomodoro technique. Another strategy that we use in Power is separating the generating from the editing and not trying to do the two things at once. That's the number one blocker for me personally, is when I stall. I can't write. It doesn't come out. And I step back and I say, what's happening? What's going on? I'm trying to do the two at the same time. I always use the analogy of trying to drive a car while you're pressing on the accelerator and the brake at the same time. You don't go very far, very fast, right? And it's clunky. It's irritating. That's what happens when you try to generate and edit, because generating and editing are different processes that tap on different brain mechanisms that are incompatible. They work against each other. So if you're trying to do them at the same time, nothing will come out. So learning, and this is hard to learn, but gee whiz, that's what practice is for, right? For trying to learn something. Slow down. We talked about that. Manage distractions. Jennifer and Maggie talked about that quite a bit. You know, you turn off. I don't understand leaving email and Facebook on while writing. It's a concept that because I don't do it, I just don't understand it. But I have to remind people, turn it off. Don't turn it on. And don't check your email first thing in the day either. It will ruin your day, by the way. Yeah. So I don't. Exactly. Yeah, everybody else's emergencies or urgencies become your emergencies. Set goals. Part of deliberate practice is having sessions of practice, and each session has a goal, a small achievable goal. And that's where the writing log comes in, where you can specify your goals in your writing log and then say at the end of the session, did I meet it? So my goal today is to draft a shitty first draft of a purpose statement for this paper. Okay, is it a feasible goal? Yeah, it's a feasible goal. I can't do a polished one yet, right? But I can do a really ugly, messy one. Yes, I can do that. So that will be my goal for this writing session. And then you can mark on your log, did you achieve that goal or not? So part of the deliberate practice is that practice with goals, mini goals, slowing down, and the feedback. We'll talk about feedback in a minute, too. Log your writing time or your productivity. We have seen that productivity increases when you log your writing time and when you share your writing logs. So a lot of us have writing partners or writing buddies with whom we exchange our writing logs. Write to think. This is a strategy that, bar none, elevates your thinking and the quality of your thinking and of your students' thinking by a quantum factor. The students who get this, that I have worked with, who get this writing to think, become some of the most outstanding students ever. Their knowledge, their learning, gains such depth because they're using their writing to figure out what they don't know, right? So that's we were having a debate in the previous session about when you don't know what you're going to write. Well, use that. I don't know what I'm going to write. Is it because I don't know this topic? What do I need to learn about this topic? And write about those things. Why can't I write about this? And you're writing that, and that will help you clarify, if nothing else, those things that you have to be bluntly honest and say, I don't know these things. I need to go learn them. Okay. So writing to think is something that, and you faculty members, and even you self-employed academic writers, if you want to gain depth in your thinking and your writing, use the writing to think. Use the writing to explore what the heck it is that you really know about something and what are the nuances that you don't know yet and should know. And please be honest with yourself and then go learn, right? Write, expect, and accept messy drafts. Shitty first drafts are a part of a writer's life, and they are important. Peter Elbow has a gem of a quote. If you haven't read Writing with Power, read it. He has a quote at the very end of the book, and he says, the precondition for writing well, the precondition, the determinant, the one thing that's needed for writing well is the ability to write badly. Exactly. He says, the precondition, think about it, folks, the precondition for writing well is the ability to write badly. Can anybody here not write badly? No, it can or cannot. It can just be just sitting down and writing. I can write badly. So if I can write badly, I have what it takes to write well. But he doesn't end the quote there. It doesn't end there. He says, precondition for writing well is the ability to write badly and to write when you're not in the mood. If you can manage those two things, I promise you, you can be a good writer. Yes. The author is Peter Elbow, like elbow.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, he's the main theory person of the writing process, and Power is based partly on his theory of the writing process also. Okay, so those are some of the strategies. Another one there is journal the writing process or the project that you're working on and journal your professional life. This is something that we learned from Donnell Stevens, who's sitting right there at the back, went to Texas A&M, did a workshop for Power Folks on journaling for your professional life. And I have a picture of her book in the next slide. I'll show it to you. Talk to her about this. All our Power consultants journal their professional lives and sometimes do several other journals also, personal journals. Several of you do several journals. And bar none is one of the best strategies for, again, gaining depth and being organized and going very far in terms of productivity. And, of course, obtain feedback. And I'll talk about feedback in just a second. But that's the book that was our lifesaver for Power Folks, and we started all carrying our professional journals. We probably brought them to this conference with us. I would highly recommend you talk to Danelle about, having her for a workshop on this, because this is transformative also. So writing to keep track of your life as a whole. So I'm going to finish this next slides, and then we're going to take a break. But one thing I want you to think about is this. Most models of the writing process, they will recommend this. You've got to find the motivation. You got to, if you know a little bit of psychology and stuff, you got to look at the cognitive factors, the mental factors, the emotional factors. If you know what those are, the self-efficacy factors, the emotional intelligence, if you know what those factors are, you can tweak them and you can generate more motivation to write and you will write more. That's what most writing models will propose, correct? Power, however, will propose, Power will propose a model that is slightly different. Power proposes you write more. You just sit down and write something, even if it's to copy somebody else's words for a while, and that will generate motivation, and it will change your way of thinking, which in turn will then change your writing and produce more, and it becomes a dynamic system in itself. Okay? But if you're lacking in motivation, you don't know where to start, just start by setting a time for your practice sessions. I'm going to practice my writing from 8 to 8:15 every morning, and I'm going to have a mini goal for my practice, and that's it. And I'm going to try to do it for 66 days and see if it becomes a habit, and if I can increase it to 20 minutes, 25, 30, 35, etc. And I guarantee if you stay with it, stuff happens usually, okay? So, shall we take a quick break again just to get ourselves moving and go for the final end of the presentation? So, Dominique.
So, we're going to do another creativity boost break. Or did you want people to take an actual break? What do you want?
We don't have time to take
an actual break. Okay.
So if you
all right.
Need to take a break,
if you need to take a break, we're adults. Get up, walk around. That's fine. Totally. So, but the creativity boost with this break, this is called bilateral conversation. And so what I'm going to ask you to do is actually have a conversation with yourself, and you're going to use both first your dominant hand and then your non-dominant hand. So I want you to answer the question with your dominant hand, how's it going? Yep, write it. Yes, write it down. Yes, write it down. Answer the question, how's it going? Just needs to be a sentence or two. Just whatever pops into your mind. Don't think too hard about it. And now, are folks done? Now you're going to switch with your non-dominant hand. Yes, it's going to be scribble, unless you're ambidextrous. Answer the same question with the first thing that pops into your mind. How's it going? Now look at the two answers. What are some observations people have about the first answer compared to the second answer and that people who are willing to share?
You looked at me, you raised your eyes. That's like for me to go towards you.
That nonverbal communication. The first one with the dominant hand, it was smooth, easier. I put things are going okay, I guess. And then the second one, I wrote, this is a struggle. And boy, was it a struggle just to get it out. So, yeah, that looks like something I wrote in kindergarten, I think.
Good.
Someone else, what did they?
The dominant hand was more positive than the non-dominant hand. The dominant hand said pretty well. The non-dominant hand said, okay, I need more practice.
Your non-dominant hand is your little Zen master. My non-dominant hand will say things like, I need a nap. Or, life isn't always as easy as you think it'll be. Or, it's getting better, but it's still hard. Donnell.
Let's see. My dominant hand said, it's going well, decided to do a hand drawing and a PowerPoint for my presentation tomorrow. And my non-dominant hand said, I like my playfulness.
I love that. That's really creative. I love that. So the notion here is, again, just to kind of have little creativity boosts and to allow yourself to get in touch with both the dominant side of you that tends to be more linear. It can also sometimes sugarcoat things a little bit and then move in to the non-dominant hand. And so this is an activity that we would actually recommend for our power folks to do as kind of warm up to writing. Because I don't know about you, but I get really anxious when I think like, oh, I have to write. But if I say, oh, I'm just going to have a bilateral conversation with my dominant and non-dominant hand, makes it that much easier. And it's really simple to do. It's just a couple minutes out of your day as you get into the writing warm up.
Thanks, Dominique. Okay, moving to the end, we have about 13 minutes left or so. So here are the tools. Remember, the power model is a system in itself. One of the little balls inside that system or one of the elements in the system are the strategies, and I listed them for you previously. The other little element in the system, it's not little, but it's little just because it's the graph shows it as little, are the tools. And the tools are basically gadgets, resources, books, online stuff, information, things to try. And they're too numerous to actually list them here. So that's what you will get if you send me an email, and I will send you a Dropbox folder with a list of resources. They will be mostly books that we have read that we highly recommend, and also websites with resources that we think are useful. But you should create your own little toolbox of things to do, things to try, and make it so you try something different every so often. You say, I'm going to try this tool, I'm going to try it for several weeks, and then I'm going to try another tool if this one doesn't work as well. And that sort of keeps you motivated to keep coming back to your writing sessions also, and makes it a little bit more of play than just, you know, work type of thing. So anything you can create to artificially make you want to come back to writing works well in our model here. And these tools help tremendously. The last element in the system of the power model is support. And basically, if you remember, the whole idea of the power services came about with this idea of let's support each other in our academic writing. Okay. So there are specifically two types of support that we think are very important for academic writers. One is the emotional and social support, and one is the instrumental or feedback type of support. Remember, we need to be able to engage in deliberate practice appropriately and efficiently. We need to get feedback. We need to slow down to be able to catch our mistakes and really pay attention to what we're doing. But sometimes we're not able to capture our mistakes when we're writing. We just don't see them, right? So we need somebody to give us feedback. So in terms of giving us feedback, Peter Elbel talks about we need different types of feedback givers at different stages of the writing process. So when you're starting your first shitty draft and you're even afraid to show it to anybody else, and that's okay not to show it, but if you have a trusted friend that could read that piece and just answer the question, is this a good idea? Sometimes that's the only little piece of feedback you need at that moment to make you move forward. Yes, it's a good idea, but you know what? What if you added this little twist to the idea? Think about it. And it's wonderful because you haven't written a 30-page paper yet when somebody comes and says, oh, that's an interesting paper, but
if you had added this little twist and you go, oh, forget it, right? I'm not going to rewrite the 30 pages anymore. But you're just starting, and somebody says, how about thinking about this idea with this little twist? And you go, oh, my goodness, that makes it so much better. Yes, I'm going to try that, right? It's the appropriate feedback at that moment. When you start developing your writing and it's still maturing and you're struggling with organization, with framing, etc., it's not the time for somebody to catch all of your comma errors or all of your grammar errors. It's not the moment for that. It's not the appropriate feedback at the appropriate time. However, it's really okay and really helpful if somebody reads it and says, I think you skip from here to here too quickly. How about moving this up instead? Try this. That's the appropriate feedback. So instrumental and feedback support has to do with learning, and in Power, we train our folks to give and to receive appropriate feedback. Folks, I can't talk enough about feedback. I do entire two-hour lectures on feedback because we as faculty members, we don't know how to give feedback, okay? Just assume that. I had to totally relearn how to give feedback to my students because the feedback I used to give didn't work. And if you want to talk about it later, we can talk about it later. But we need to learn how to give feedback that's useful to students. But the students need to also learn how to ask for appropriate feedback. They need to know what it is, and they need to learn how to ask about it or ask for it. And again, in the resources list, you'll get details on this or things that will have more details on how to do this. Peter Elbel talks about you need allied readers, you need peer readers. So you need the allied readers, the people that will love you even though you write badly. The peer readers are the people that understand the topic and can tell you if you're writing something really stupid. And I added to these two categories, I added expert readers because in academia we really need those people that are top experts in our field to really catch the stupid things we say. And we need their feedback. But we don't want their feedback on the first shitty draft, right? We want their feedback at the very end of something, of course. But also added to that is the emotional or social support. We should not neglect that. It's very, very important that we provide and receive as writers emotional and social support. And one of the areas that we've begun exploring a little bit more in Power now is the idea of emotional intelligence. So self-efficacy, writing anxiety, self-management, how do people manage themselves and their emotions and related to in relationship to their writing is an important piece. Knowing who you are as a writer, what gets you going as a writer, what motivates you, what blocks you, what helps, what doesn't help, very important part of having emotional intelligence. Explore that, folks. If you're going to be a professional writer, if you're an academic, you are a professional writer, you need to learn about these things, about you as a writer. And then you need to go out and say, I need support in this area because I know myself and I know that I need support. And I need that my strength, I know that my strength is this area and I can give you support in this area because that's my strong point. So knowing yourself as a writer to be able to be appropriate support for other people, really, really important. Anybody in the panel want to add anything to that? I'm just jump in, okay? I'm watching time a little bit, but if not. So the cage, the environment in which this the two big systems, the services and the Power writing model are rotating inside, is the context in which Power exists. And of course, it's in a big research-intensive university. Texas A&M University is research-intensive, extensive, usually called used to be called R1. That's not the terminology now anymore. But what facilitated Power existing and surviving in that context was really leadership vision. So if you are in positions of administration in your field, in academia, start thinking about a vision for academic writing as being the culture in your unit that is fully supported. Okay. I am thankful to our former dean, who was the one who said, give me a budget of zero and I'll support your program, because at the right time, later, he came up with some monies that helped. But he always, I mean, he gave me full rein to work on this. It was beautifully supported in that way. Financial support also helps because you see all the services that we provide. And teaching the writing studios is almost the equivalent of teaching a graduate class. And we do, Dominique and I do two studios each month. So it's almost like adding two graduate classes every month, and we have financial support to get one course released to cover those. It helps a lot already. The infrastructure, you know, if you are in a place where writing is expected and writing, yeah, and that's part of your evaluations, look at the systems and look at the reward structure and what's going on there. And you'll find probably more punishing structures than reward structures, but look at what's going on and see if you can work at some level to change some of that. Maybe, for instance, with supporting people to come to these conferences, supporting people to go to writing workshops, bringing people in, like Danielle Stevens, bringing people in to do workshops at your university about writing. Think about what's going on, what you could do. It doesn't take a whole lot of money to do it either. Creating a climate where everybody is writing is something that takes time, but it's happened at Texas A&M. So if you walk down the hallway where my office is, there's lots of graduate students that have their offices there. Several of them are power consultants. And you know when not to knock on anybody's door or go into anybody's office, because they put these little signs on the door that say, "I'm writing, please do not interrupt," type of thing. And they learned that from the power model, and we encourage that, and we respect that. And so we have created a culture in which if somebody says, "No, I can't schedule a meeting with you right now because I have my writing session," most people, at least in our college, understand what you're talking about. And the productivity is amazing, folks. This group here in front of you, you can ask them individually what their productivity is like. Some of these people over here are 10 times more productive than I am, as a fact. And I'm the one teaching this stuff. No. You wouldn't believe. A lot of people in this group, they came in thinking, "I can't do this. I'm not cut out for academic writing. I hate academic writing. I'll never be good at it." And they're now winning awards, left and right, year after year, because of this. I had a graduate student who was about to drop out of graduate school entirely in the summer, and she took my writing class. And then she said, "You know what? I think I can do this. If this is a learned issue, I can learn it. I can practice." And she started practicing by submitting to any little grants she could find that had the word "student" on it. And so she would apply for these $500 grants, $300, tiny little grants from professional organizations here and there. And I told her, I said, and she would get, first couple of times she got rejected, and I said, "Brittany, why are you wasting your time with this? You know, it's such little money." And she said, "I'm doing it for the practice. If nothing else," and I'm going, "Yeah, duh, I should have known that." If nothing else, I'm getting good feedback, and I'm practicing writing grants. After a while, folks, she started landing grant after grant after grant after grant. There hasn't been a grant she hasn't gotten yet. She's now an assistant professor applying for a K award. And when she wrote her dissertation, she got a $3,000 grant from one of the professional organizations to collect data for her dissertation. Just because she kept at it. And she said, "I'm just doing it. I don't care." That issue of not caring about the outcome, but trying to learn from the process, it was amazing. Okay, so this can really transform a lot of the culture and the climate in your unit if everybody is in the same boat and writing together and learning from each other, supporting each other. So this is a self-sustainable model, the idea that you train the people and you let them loose, and nobody's micromanaging anything in this program. It's a very emergent, dynamic model, I guess, services, etc., where we don't micromanage anybody. We don't do much. And some people say, "Oh, what's the evaluation? Have you done that?" No, we're not evaluating it right now. We just know that, you know, the rates of publication in the College of Ed went up by a factor of 10 or something, like 10 times more productive from one year to the next all of a sudden. It kind of coincided with when power started, and it's like, that's not power really because it's too early. But then we sustained that and went. So there's something there, but I really don't want to bog down the service of the program with evaluations, and certainly don't want to get the people that volunteer their time for this to feel that they're being micromanaged or anything like that. But the rewards have come from seeing a lot of students that would have not graduated graduate because they found a power consultant they liked,
And a lot of them are in engineering. A lot of the engineering students are the ones who have latched onto one of the power consultants and were able to finally graduate because they don't have that. Nobody, their advisors, their committee members, nobody's talking about how to write, how to get things done in the appropriate format so you can graduate, right? They're not getting that information. So if you, wherever you are, can start something like this, it is invaluable. So to summarize, Power Services in its current form is a peer support network, and it has two systems within a context, basically, and their future dissemination. So UNLV, University of Nevada, Las Vegas, is starting a small power group. Most of the power consultants that graduate and go to their universities want to start something. Because they're assistant professors, I tell them, don't start anything right now big. Don't start anything big, but start something small with your own students and just model. Just say, I'm going to be here from 1 to 2 every afternoon writing. Want to come and join me? And then maybe we can share some and give feedback and stuff. And that's already starting a climate and a culture change big time, right? So for you, what I would encourage you to do is to implement some of these strategies, get more information with the resources list, get tools, and find support mechanisms for feedback. If you had to say, okay, I can only do one, which one would you start me at? I would say start with the find support first. Find support with somebody with whom you can speak the same language of writing. We're in the same boat. We understand the same struggles. Let's find resources and tools. And there's so much out there to help you out. So take a look at what's available. And talk to us afterwards. We're going to be here. Most of us are going to be here today and tomorrow all day. And we'll be happy to answer questions, brainstorm with you, or whatever. Yes.
What distinguish academic writing from any science writing, Mark Twain or Eliot or Shakespearean writing? What is the main feature of academic writing?
So the question is, what's the unique feature of academic writing? What distinguishes academic writing from other types of writing? And I would say usually what traditionally distinguishes is the format. Basically, you are tied, if you're publishing in professional journals, you're tied to a certain order and a certain structure of how you present the information and how much you need to cite all of your sources and that kind of stuff. However, what's really needed right now, I think, this is my personal bias, we really need scientists that can write in creative nonfiction genre, who can write in narrative styles, who can write for the non-science public. So I always encourage my students to write academically, the format, the way that's required for publication in journals, but I also encourage them to write creatively because you need to learn how to communicate your science to non-science audience, people who don't know the language, who don't know the structure, etc. And it can be done, and it can be done beautifully. Some of the best books out there are in that genre, okay? So that's why I say, if you used to like creative writing, but academic writing kind of killed it for you, go back and try to revive that love again, because it will help you with the academic writing. But there are distinctions. The distinction is basically like, just basically format. It's like when you speak several languages and you have several dialects in the same language. Science is a dialect within the writing language. That's all it is, basically. So you need to understand it, know how to do it, and just do it. It's very boring, actually. Very simple. It is. Very boring, very simple, very direct, right? There's nothing too creative about it, and so it can be learned by anybody.
Oh, I just jump in, or?
The ideas, yes. But usually you can't be very creative in presenting the ideas. They don't let you, unless you're writing a book. But so that's a distinction there. Yeah.
It's just interesting, that question. I'm sort of doing a roundtable. I was going to quit the PhD program when I started. First, before I start, I just wanted to thank you because last week I received a grant, and I received a comment from an editor, reviewer. Uh-huh. So I received the two the same week, that I had good writing. And it's because I read your book. Aww. And I'm not just saying that. I even carry around your exercise 21, tighten the paragraphs here, because you say it's the most important thing to do. And anyway, so I carry it with me with my elements of style, certain little Bibles I have. But one of the things and one of the reasons I was going to quit the PhD program and is because I couldn't ever read academic articles. And so to the gentleman's question to you, because I love Peter Elbow's book as well, too. Another book that for me is a Bible is cited often is William Zinsser's On Writing Well.
On Writing
and
Well.
One of the things he says about academic writing, and he is very critical of writing, he says that computers have made good writers better and bad writers worse, and mainly because they don't slow down and look back and emailing and so forth. But about scientific or academic writing, I always had that question, and it's been years, but the TA has taught me something about that, because he says in his book, he says, whatever you want to call it, writing, he says it's that good writing is just good writing, whatever you want to call it. And McGill University had a seminar on scientific writing, and one of the girls there, Linda Cooper, who's well known, she went around in Pure Sciences and got feedback from editors who were complaining about cluttered writing and not simple writing. And it was just about simple writing. It's writing is writing, and there's no such a thing to her as academic writing. It's actually just clear. And she's saying it's unfortunate that all the great research and great theories and great review of literatures never gets communicated properly because of jargon, clutter, and trying to use words that, and so Zinsser, what he says is that it seems bad writing seems to increase with years of education.
Yes.
He's critical, I understand. Yes. I'm not trying to criticize.
But both, yeah, thanks for bringing that up. And Zinsser, I don't know if you know, he died this year.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a huge loss. But Zinsser was the master of clarity. And if there's one thing that should distinguish scientific and academic writing from all other types of writing, should be, but it's not, should be clarity. Clarity is queen. You cannot afford to be misunderstood. You cannot afford that. You cannot afford ambiguity in the writing. It has to be crystal clear. And Zinsser was not a scientific or academic writer, but he was always also for that. Clarity in the writing. So he would do away with useless words all the time. So if you have a chance, read On Writing Well from Zinsser. It probably is on my resource list. It's a book that sold 3 million copies without one piece of advertising.
When you're working with a student, we're supposed to, and I always forget one of them, this is why I'm asking you, we're supposed to be talking to them about organization, clarity, and the third thing, and they all kind of end up working.
Yeah, what Oma's talking about is when we power consultants sit down with a student that comes to consult, what they're trained to do is to triage. So just like a patient in crisis, and you need to know what's the most pressing problem with that patient so you keep the patient alive, right? And we usually triage in four areas. And this comes from Peter Elbow. Peter Elbow says most of the mistakes or the problems with writing can be summarized into four different areas, okay? So one is clarity, the other is organization, the other is usage, and the other is grammar. So, but interestingly enough, that's what I train folks to do, and that's what I'm trained to do. But 98 or 99% of the time, which one do you think is the most pressing problem?
Organization.
Which hinders clarity in the way. But clarity, I leave clarity, and I define clarity as really clarity of concepts, and your sentences are clear, for instance, okay? But most of the time, what really is jumbled up and disorganized is the organization of the text. And there are tricks and tips for making the text clearer and more organized. It's not like you have to discover this on your own.
One of the things I tell my doc students and the people I coach is you have to go back to your fourth grade writing teacher, your fourth grade English teacher, the outline. After I wrote my first three books, I finally said, all right, I've got it. I have to start with the outline, and I have to stick with the outline, and I have to keep fleshing it out from the outline. And that's a big issue with the organization.
Okay, but I'm going to be totally counter to that. That's the first thing I tell students not to do. No, don't outline. Because everybody that has a problem with blocking themselves in writing are trying to outline first. Now, Kathleen, hang on. Don't outline to start. But reverse outlining is a strategy that I learned this with Tara Gray, who's a member of TAA. Reverse outlining is a strategy that helps you check whether your text is organized or not. And it results in an outline. So definitely, I always use reverse outlining to check in midway and end at least, if not more times. But I don't start. I don't start with because it imposes order, which you may not have in the beginning. You may know what you want to say, but you don't know what order you want to say. And an outline requires that you know the order. And because you don't know the order, it doesn't come out. Or you spend 2 hours, you do the darn outline, but then like Peter Elbow says, your writing goes into one universe and the outline is going in a different universe and the two shall never meet when you start writing.
Usually the contract with the publisher has a table of contents. Yes. And that freezes you on something before you start it.
That's for books. For articles, you don't have to. But you're right. When you're proposing a book, you need to have an outline to the publisher. But thankfully, they don't hold you to that too much. They know it's tentative. So do something, turn it in as a proposal, but don't tie yourself to it because you may not want to keep yourself in that order as the writing emerges later. But definitely use reverse outlining. I know we're out of time, so we need to go. We can stay here and talk all day. Thank you so much, folks. Appreciate it. I just want to introduce briefly two people that were not introduced. So Tiberio Garza, Dr. Tiberio Garza is a power consultant that just came in. And Dr. Oma Williams, also from Texas, she used to be a power consultant. And Dr. Chilis Scott, right? Here at UNLV, also used to be a powerful power consultant. We miss her dearly. So thank you, folks.